5 o'clock, and I call to order the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors Business Meeting. We are meeting virtually and in person at Kiawanda Community Center, actually the Hobby Room today. Normally we meet in the Faye Jensen Room, but it's under construction. So first off, a real rules of conduct. All cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact. Be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions. We'll bypass the rules of conduct for public comment at this time. Roll call. Director Gogas.
Here.
Director Carlton.
Here.
Director Price.
Here.
I'm the chair, Director Donahue. We are missing Director Strotska at this time. If she does come before the end of the meeting, I will note that for the record. On the minutes of April 11th, 2023, business meeting, are there any corrections or deletions or?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Staff president was John Robert Pepperger, Leonard Whiteman.
He was on here for about 2 seconds.
So he was remote?
Yeah.
I've brought it up before. I'd like to, if people are going to be remote, it needs to be stated on there, because I always write down who's here and stuff. So if it needs to come up as a, later on in the, down the road, that people that are present and people that are video, whatever. So,
well, under the circumstances when we have both venues, that's not a bad idea. If you can make,
I will try to interrupt you nicely.
Okay, thank you very much.
Because they recommended when I went to the SDAO meeting and stuff that they recommended that, and so just.
Okay.
Knowledge, what
could
I mean, learned.
Could, is it something we could just add as a subcategory of the roll call, just after we take roll call, make an announcement of...
Is anybody on? He came in kind of in the middle of the meeting, and he was having technical
problems. I'll just acknowledge it for the audience.
So he didn't stay.
He didn't stay.
And he was late, too, I think.
Yeah, very late.
Okay, are there any other corrections? If not, I have one or two. All right, on page 4 of 6 on the minutes, item B, authority manager review form, it was stated that I said this is tedious and we should put it off and let the HR person do it. We should hash this out. I believe I said we would table this until the next meeting. If anybody said something about let an HR person do it, that might have been Ann, but... Do you recall, Ann?
I don't recall exactly what I said. I do recall, though, believing, and I may well have said, that I thought that I wouldn't have said tedious, but I would have suggested we should let the HR person do it because she's under contract to us as a professional
in
this field.
That's what I thought.
And I thought we should let her do the professional work she does.
At the end of that little section, I think we should table this until the next meeting. So
part of the reason we tabled it was that Sean wasn't here and didn't have a copy of what you distributed in print. So
correct.
And my recollection was that we were talking about two different things. One was revising the authority manager review form, which, if I recall, and I don't remember who said it, was a little tedious, and one was the 360-degree review from employees, which we were having the HR person do, right? That's kind of what my recollection was.
Yeah, I did suggest, though, that we have the HR person redo the draft of the
I thought you did. But
yeah, because I felt that that was appropriate for
I think it might not be a bad idea, Rochelle, to go over those recordings and after hearing your comments.
I'll let Sharon know. I've given the minutes to her.
Okay.
One other thing on item page 5 of 6, item D, SDC methodology and schedule adoption. It states that Chair Donahue said our master plans were done by a subcontractor, and I believe that was John said that.
Well, not our master plans, but the SDC analysis was done by a subcontractor.
Okay.
Right. So, and I think you did say that in this discussion.
Yeah, so that needs to be corrected there. And I think that's all.
And it does get confusing. I have sympathy for Sharon trying to do that. But you might want to listen to it with her and so you can see. I mean, it's confusing.
Okay, with those corrections, are there any other? Alrighty, we'll move on to the next item.
So we will not approve until we see revised minutes. Is that your idea?
We could normally approve with
the recommended changes.
With the recommended changes, okay.
Okay, so I'll move that we approve the April 11th, 2023 as amended.
I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. All four directors present signify by saying aye. Motion carried. Financial report, accounts payable of April 15th and April 30th of 2023. Are there any comments?
Yep.
How many do you have?
Two, just a couple.
Couple or a few?
Just two.
Okay, well, I had quite a few myself, but
go ahead.
I called in, so go ahead.
No, nope. Somebody can go first.
Go ahead.
First time. I always go first.
Go.
Okay. Well, maybe they're the same things. All right. Cart services, Dory Days. We got two of those. What's up with that?
We have a hope and a dream to participate in Dory Days this year. So...
And is that the theme of the thing? Hope and a dream?
No, that's a personal PCJ hope and dream.
We had assumed that they'd have the booths and stuff that they usually do, and we were going to participate with the booth, and we bought some stickers and a water conservation coloring books for the kids, and then after we bought them, we found out that they weren't having the booths this year.
Or have not committed to
having the booths. Okay. So
they're not going to have them down at the four-way stop.
They don't have enough volunteers yet.
When I called to reserve the booth, they said that at the time they weren't doing it this year. Maybe that's changed. We'd still like to have a booth, but this was just stuff to participate in the celebration.
So it's something that could hold over for.
Oh, easily. Yeah, I mean, we can hold it till next year. That's just a box of.
There's pens and stickers and coloring books.
Give them out in the office if you have a family come in.
True.
What about
what else do you have, Cameron? Oh, excuse me.
I was going to say, what about put it in the solids truck and handing them out? Put the solids truck in the parade.
We could do that.
Make it real ripe.
We could do that. Yeah, the solids truck. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well, we thought about the parade, but we're just not sure yet. We would have really preferred to have a booth, and we could have
sing our praises.
It's much better for conversation about the subject.
It is.
The hope and a prayer for the float.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. And then we paid card services, hazardous materials disposal, $351. What were we disposing? That's about 700 something.
we had a lot of collected chemicals. This was at like a hazardous waste disposal. We had a lot of miscellaneous chemicals and cleaning supplies and so forth that we had around for a long time, and we just decided it was time to get rid of them.
Now, could that stuff go up to when they do the garbage disposal hazard collection?
Not the type of things that we were disposing of.
Yeah, they were, I mean, you know.
That stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it?
I don't know. I've complained about the coffee and stuff. Now we're paying for seasoning and coffee again.
Well, I'd like to clarify.
Please.
The amounts that the dollar amounts spent on coffee that were reviewed during the last meeting, it came to my attention after the meeting that wasn't 1 month worth of coffee, that was 3 to 4 months worth of coffee, because we weren't reconciling our petty cash until our petty cash was depleted, which means that we weren't reconciling petty cash purchases for 3 to 4 months. And since then, we have stopped doing that. We are now reconciling the petty cash on a monthly basis so that it won't give people the impression that we're dropping lots and lots of money on nothing but coffee every single month.
Well, I did ask Rochelle that. She said it was for 3-4 months and stuff like that, but you've got another $30 for coffee, and we're paying for seasonings.
Well, it could have been for a barbecue celebration we had for a somebody had gotten a certification. Actually, it was
Jeff and Jason got certified. Yeah. So we had a celebration day.
It just, all this little stuff adds up, and I don't know. It goes back to I was really disappointed at the meeting. I really was. And for people to find out, yeah, we're paying for all this little stuff, and yet people can't show up. Anyway.
Wait, hold on. Those seem to be two different things.
I know, but it's just...
people not showing up to the meeting, I think, is different than providing coffee for our staff.
Well, I don't believe that we should. When I went to work and stuff, I brought my own coffee. I brought my own seasonings. I brought my own lunch and stuff. I didn't go down to the corner.
Why don't we discuss this outside of the meeting?
Well, anyway. Then there was Hatch Company for $4.75, pH gel probe.
Yes.
What is it?
It's a piece of equipment.
It's a replacement pH electrode.
Oh, for testing and stuff like that? Oh, okay. All right, Tom, your turn.
Okay, I already had my questions asked because I called in before the meeting. So accounts payable, there are no other discussion about that. I'd entertain a motion. Ann?
I will move that we approve the accounts payable for April 15th and April 30th of 2023.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve accounts payable for April. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yep. All those opposed? Motion carried unanimously. Okay, our general ledger, our fiscal year 22-23. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 6, manager's report. John?
Thank you, Tom. A couple of things here I wanted to mention briefly. Our HR consultant has completed the employee interviews. She's completed the analysis and she's completed the report. I've passed that on to Tom, and I think, Tom, you've since distributed to the rest of the board members?
Yes.
So that process, the good news is that's done well in advance of my review, so it gives everybody plenty of time to review. Wanted to mention the water rights permit extension. The application has been completed and submitted to the Oregon Water Resources Department. There has to be a public comment period, and that public comment, I think it's 30 days. Once the public comment period is over, the department will review our application on its merits and will make a determination about our permit extension. Hopefully we don't get any objections concerns or anything about our plan. I don't think we will, because all the terms and conditions that were agreed to with our last permit extension are going to carry over to this one. So I don't think the plan will be very controversial, and I think it will be approved. Wanted to mention, as you all know, I've been working on a water leak resolution, trying to find the time to get it done. I had to postpone it again so that I could focus on the ADU resolution that I put in the board packet. I felt like since we have already been contacted by somebody who is going to pursue installing an approved ADU based off the county's new guidelines, I figured we'd better make sure that we've got something in place for that. We did receive our new sewer video camera system. We used it for the first time to TV the sewer line at Ruppel. I picked that one because if I was asked a question about the condition of the sewer line on Ruppel during a recent meeting, I wanted to be able to provide a good, accurate answer. The good news is that pipeline appears to be in good condition. There's a couple of low spots in it that I don't think are causing us any operational problem at this time. Overall, the pipeline's is in good condition. You know, wanted to also mention that we are launching the bridge pipeline replacement. These are the sewer lines that span the three bridges in town. That would be Beachy Bridge, that would be the Slough Bridge, and that would be Woods Bridge. Just point of clarification, we're going to be on Beachy, we're not going to be replacing the pipeline. That pipeline was only replaced 15, 16 years ago, but what we are going to do is we're going to be replacing the mega lug joints on it. I think everybody saw some pictures of those in our master plans, and they look like they're in need of a replacement. We will also be, while we're in the process of replacing the pipelines, my mind doesn't make sense to replace the pipelines without doing some seismic resiliency upgrades on the system. That was a need identified in our water master plan for sure, that we have a variety of areas in our infrastructure that we should consider upgrading from a seismic resiliency standpoint. We will do that as part of this project. Project scheduled for winter months, because we don't want to be having a lot of disruption to bridge traffic during the summer months. I think you have to cross a bridge to get into town just about any way you come. So that's why we're scheduling that for this winter. I'll keep you guys posted about that. But other than that, Tom, I think that's all I have for the manager's report.
You've got that call with Parametrics. Are you thinking of, we had talked about changing up Parametrics.
Well, we had a conversation about that at the last board meeting, I thought. And I was, it sounded at the time, that I was able to persuade folks to continue on with Parametrics.
We confirmed that at the last meeting.
Yes, and that's why I reached out to them.
So how did you feel after talking to them? Do you think we're on the right track with these guys again?
Oh, I think we totally are. I think they dropped the ball a little bit with the master plans. I think they, in hindsight, realized that our intent when we signed the contract, I believe, was they would work on these in in parallel instead of in series. I think they realized that they could have done a better job with us. But from a design standpoint and a construction standpoint, I have been very happy with the quality of their work. We've got a lot of things that they have been instrumental in building in our system. I think everything that they have designed is working very well. And I'm very happy so far with their performance with Rupel.
I was just looking for it in here when we were talking about it. I can't find it right at the moment, but we decided, if memory is correct, that any further work we do with them, and I believe I mentioned it at the meeting, that we have incentives and penalties for timeliness.
Yes, and we haven't seen, we just had the launch call. We're still a ways from even seeing a draft of a contract, and we will make sure that there are some penalties for late work. Usually, I've seen it both ways. If you have penalties, a lot of times the expectation is all you also have incentives. But
I think that's fair.
But it's something to think about. Once we get the contract, obviously I'll be bringing it to the board for approval, and we'll make sure that it has all the terms and conditions we're comfortable with.
Excellent. So we have unfinished business, if we move on.
Are we done with manager's report?
We are.
I have a couple questions.
Okay. Sure.
Sorry.
Go ahead on. Sorry.
One of which I think was an item on here. What was the, maybe it wasn't in the manager's report, the line of credit for $500,000 we were going to look into whether or not that was still.
That's on unfinished.
That's on unfinished? Okay.
Yeah, that's we'll get to an agenda item.
The second one was the permits for the Rupel replacement. Is community development aware that the roads department is going to require you to pave significant portions of it?
They aren't, and I did want to say that I wouldn't say we're going to pave significant portions of it, but we're going to pave more of it than we anticipated. The community development is not aware of that. It should not really change the grade per se. If it did, it might be an inch or two. And I haven't thought to mention that to the community development department, but I think that they're I really don't believe that that would spur a no rise analysis.
My recommendation would be to let them know soon.
Okay.
And the reason for that is there is some language that is different between the floodway and the floodplain and Rupel's in the floodway,
yep,
about impervious surfaces in the floodway. So I would just want to caution you, that could be one of those things that if community development sees it and they think that you're only putting in an asphalt patch, they might let that slide as something that's not, you know, would not fall under the purview of an impervious.
Sure.
Paved, right? In other words, within the floodway, they're getting away from paving in favor of gravel because it has better
absorption
and that kind of thing. So I would bring that up just to make sure it doesn't bite you in the, you know what. Later.
Well, I appreciate that tip because I didn't even consider that for a minute that would
because
be an issue.
Because it was a paved road.
At some point,
we're replacing what we tore up, except there's not a whole lot of pavement
there. It's the floodway, and that's
exactly
hypersensitive
it's
right now.
Yeah. Better safe than sorry.
I will definitely do that, Sean. I appreciate that tip because that's something I hadn't even thought about. I'll be highly disappointed if it amounts to anything, but nonetheless, we better find out. So I will do that.
So do you think your opinion's changed since it was Alex that was here from Parametrics Saturday?
Andrew.
So do you think it's going to be more than what he figured as far as like a third of what we're going to probably be responsible for?
I'm not sure I understand
how much we're going to pave.
Yeah, because by what he came up with the numbers, you said, what is it, 280 some odd thousand?
That's for the whole road.
That's for the whole road. But for the portion that he figured by the, 24 by, and then 3 and all
50
that.
50 or whatever. There were two sections about that size.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't change that professional estimate that was done strictly for the benefit of just, you know, getting such an influx of questions about it. We really put that together as just a courtesy for some of our customers. That estimate was for the whole road. I do not believe that estimate was for the road minus what we had planned to do. So I think that analysis is still good. I've only been asked for one copy of that, and I did make an announcement. I believe that those are available at the Rupel meeting, but I don't think it's going to substantially change that analysis. But it is clear that we had to change the scope of our work to include full road paving on the two sections where the water line will cross from the east side of the road to the west side of the road. Yeah.
So this is going to be an ongoing issue.
Well, I hope it won't.
John, what do you mean by impervious surfaces? What's that?
So there's, and I apologize if I'm conflating things that they're going to do and things that they're currently doing. But within the floodway, which is narrower than the floodplain, closer to the river, they were trying to get away from impervious surfaces, like pavement within the floodway. So when we did our, when we tried to fill in the empty lot next to us at Twist with fill, they wouldn't let us pave it. They required us to put in gravel because pavement was a impervious surface. And that section of Twist is in the floodplain, not the floodway. And the floodway is even more strict. So either that was something they did because they don't like me, which is possible.
No.
Or it's something they did because it's something that's either coming or part of the rules now. So my recollection at the time that we did it, from why they said we couldn't do it, is because they weren't allowing paving in the floodway anymore.
And Sean, wouldn't that be different from the concept of a road, which is already paved and we're replacing pavement?
I don't know if it would, and I would not give that benefit of the doubt.
I wouldn't either. I'd check it out. But there are often those differences. What I can do for the entire lot or what I can do on my own property is sometimes different than what they can do on the street.
Because
the street serves all of the population.
And we didn't have asphalt.
And my driveway serves me.
Yeah.
So there are lots of nuances to it, and I think it's good. It's a good suggestion to raise that issue at community development and just double check, make sure.
I will do that for sure. Yeah, I think that's
all right.
Nothing would surprise me anymore.
All right, let's move on to item 7, unfinished business. First item A, Kiawanda Community Center AV proposal that was presented to us several months ago, and it wasn't completed until just recently, and we're right in the middle of construction here. Now, I personally kind of think it's a good idea to be part of this. However, there are others that disagree with that, and Ann, I believe you disagreed with me on that. As I recall, you had a couple of reasons, but I can't recall exactly what your comments were.
I'm going to try to find my message that I sent back to you, but
she's looking, Tom, I wanted to mention that Glenn had intended to be here tonight, just in support of his proposal. But he couldn't make it. He coaches baseball, and they rescheduled a ball game he had to go to tonight. So he sends his apologies.
Okay, for the record, Chamber asked us to participate in this audiovisual upgrade. That's under $80,000. The exact figure escapes me right now, but it's substantial. And they wanted us to participate, if we could, to the tune of about $5,000 to $7,000. That would cover a portion of the audiovisual in a big screen and the ability to record meetings and that such in the Faye Jensen room where we meet. And to do that would be $12,000, and they were asking us for $5,000 to $7,000. Did you find your...
I did. And I have a few different points. One of them I think Rochelle can address, which was whether or not it is legal for a public municipality to make contributions in this sense.
I reached out to SDAO about this because I wanted to make sure that we were right. And her comment back was, it is a board decision. The district may donate funds to charitable causes so long as it doesn't run afoul of any other rules, such as a conflict of interest or campaigning, and provide such expense has been budgeted for, which it has not. It's also good to just bear in mind that the board is tasked with serving the best interests of the district and being fiduciaries of public funds, so we would advise that the board, should it choose to allocate these funds to the chamber for the equipment purchase, make sure that everything is extremely transparent. The board should always be in a position to defend any expenditures of their funds, including charitable donations, when asked. The board will be holding meetings in this location and making use of the AV equipment. You would have a little stronger argument for contributing to the purchase.
Okay. So thank you for checking so thoroughly on that. One of my concerns is that it seems unwise to me to use public dollars for the purchase of equipment that we have no ownership in and no oversight of. We are not in control of who uses it. We're not in control of how it might be damaged. We're not in control of virtually anything, how it's stored, who does the maintenance on it, And so I don't consider it a necessarily wise use of public funds to purchase equipment under those circumstances. If we, as it sounds like we can, make a contribution, that changes the nature of that a little bit. I'm very sensitive to the need and the need for the community, and I've been involved in fundraising activities at the KCC a few times over the years, and I really believe in what this place does for the community. On the other hand, I still have reservations about using public funds to do that. Another concern that I have is that part of the impetus for the invitation to participate in this financially was that we seem to have shifted all of our meetings to the community center. And I do believe I don't think that we made a permanent decision on that. I think we made a decision to do that was based on the dangers of meeting in public and COVID restrictions and dangers and that sort of thing. All of those, the COVID concerns, while perhaps not down to each individual person, as governmental agencies and health agencies have removed all of those restrictions. And I do still respect that individual people may have concerns about that. But I think that the expense of meeting in this room or at the community center is also not a necessary expense. And I would just, giving a little history, I was elected to the board in 2009, so however many years ago that was, And I served on the board for a year or two prior to that because Doug Olson got elected as director at PUD. And in those 15 or 16 years, there's only been one instance since I've been sitting on the board where, lasting for a few weeks, maybe 3 or 4 months, where we had any more than 1 to 4 people of the public that attended the meetings. That was an issue that a number of members of the public wanted to explore and sort of explore every single month with us, and that was fine. And under those circumstances, I think if we were meeting in our conference room and we knew that that was going to be an ongoing issue, we could have at any time reserved a larger room here at the community center. And typically, in all those years, there have been virtually no members of the public in attendance. And that is, I'm just want to emphasize, 15 or 16 years of experience watching this happen. I think I personally take this as a vote of confidence by the public that we're not seeing people show up at our doorstep and complain. We're not getting inquiries at the office, and I have asked that question every single time we've had a meeting during the COVID times. There have been no comments from the public conveyed, and I don't believe it's worth the expense for us to continue to meet here when we have a perfectly good conference room at the office, which served our interests extremely well for decades, or however long the building's been there. And of course, when we have an instance, for example, like the master plans, that's long-range thinking, which we're charged to do as a board. And those are complicated issues. And I think in that instance, scheduling a meeting here in the public, although we may be disappointed with the turnout, that does happen. It has happened many times before. But I do think that it's appropriate in those instances of some major issue to reserve a room here and to be prepared to do the PowerPoint presentation, have the engineers here, attorneys if need be, depending on the subject, and use the room for that. But for those reasons, I personally am not completely comfortable with the idea of contributing public funds to a system that, again, we have no ownership of and no oversight of.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I have a question for Rochelle. Anne, maybe you know, is the KCC a non-profit organization?
Yes, it is.
It is, so it is a non-profit.
That's correct.
Okay. It's important to me that Kathy have her comments recorded, and she's not here right now. So I'm going to ask Sean, you have comments about this?
I do.
Okay. What do you feel?
Couple of things. First of all, I had serious safety concerns about our boardroom before COVID hit. I cannot imagine any scenario where it would be a good idea for us to go back to using that conference room. That's my opinion. So I look at using the community center as much more of a permanent thing than maybe other people do. Between some of the issues we had, and I apologize, Anne, if I am wrong on this. My recollection of the first few years of me being on the board was there were more than just a handful of people there for a couple of years. And that was just the first couple of years on my board, pretty tenuous.
We're both having anecdotal.
You bet. And admittedly, the COVID years ruined my memory.
Yes.
So, for sure. But I feel very strongly about that conference room at the PCJWSA not being safe. So I view this, like I said, I would support this because I think we're going to be here for a long time, or at least my preference would be to be here for a long time. So I certainly understand the concern about spending money on stuff that we don't own, and I share that concern, but I look at this as a long-term solution to where we have meetings.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Cameron.
Yep.
Go ahead on.
I'm in favor of it. This is a community center. We are a public water service for the public and the community. COVID, yeah, headache wish it went away. It benefits the community, and that's what we're about, is a community. And since Rochelle found out SDAO, the money that we can do, that I think we should be in support of the community. They do a lot of great things here. A lot of people use this facility, and I'd like to have it available. It's nice to have the audio video stuff now. We've got the master plan coming up. Who knows who shows up? But I mean, we've had meetings when there hasn't been anybody, and then I've seen that office or that whatever you want to call it studio filled or empty. It's nice that the resources are here. I'm in favor of it.
Okay. Well, I'll just say briefly that I'm basically in favor of it. I've noted Ann's comments. You make a good point here or two, and I understand that. So I'm going to reserve my personal opinion until I think about it a little more. And I'd also like, for the record, to have Kathy Staretska's comments for the record. I know she's not here tonight, but if we're going to spend this money, I agree. I think it's a good thing for the community, but I'd like to have a unanimous opinion if I can get it. But it's only fair. It's only fair to Kathy to have her opinion on this. So I think at this time, if there are no objections, I'd like to table this until the next meeting. Does everybody think that's a good idea?
Fine with me. It doesn't seem to be an urgent matter.
Well,
there will be times when we won't have all five of
today,
us.
So.
Yeah, but that, I mean, we're talking about the add-ons, right? So I don't think that it's going to
They're going to do it. They're already there.
Yeah, they're into it. So we're talking about supporting the $12,000 that comes.
I'd like to see, if we do this, I'd like to see something in the paper or something that, you know, we're here supporting the community and for the greater good, or however we decide, one way or the other.
Well, we have a quorum if you want to proceed with a decision.
No, I don't think so. It's fair to Kathy to get her point.
I agree.
Okay.
Well, and I'll let
Glenn
know that we'll have to get back to him with our final decision.
Kind of letting know it is, you know, it's a straw poll where we're at, but you know, it's only fair to Kathy, and I'd like to hear her opinion also. Okay, let's move on. Next item under unfinished business is the authority manager review form. I have one extra paper copy if no one has it, and I talked to, or I conversed with Sean with his comments, but I'll let him speak himself. And I'd like to, for the record, all of these competencies came directly from the old form with the addition of a new competency on financial. And I've written that up. And made it suggested change. And if anybody has any comments on the language, please give me your notes or your thoughts.
So you added Kathy's stuff in there also.
Well, that also came from, yes.
Okay.
And also her suggestion, Ruth, that was her first suggestion to have a financial competency, and so did the HR consultant.
Okay.
There's Kathy.
Oh, yay! Were your ears burning? I mean, royally.
They should have been, if they were.
I mean, it was all good. It was all good. All righty. Well, I guess you can play catch up.
Okay, well, let's continue with our current thing. Does anybody have, Kathy, we're looking at the Authority Manager Performance Review Form, and we're discussing the first item on there, which is financial. This is my language. So if there's anybody would like to change any of that language, give me your comments, please. If you don't have it, I have an extra copy if you need it.
I've got it somewhere, but if you've got it.
Here you go.
Thank you.
Ooh, bubbles. Nice. Did you do it?
There are no comments on the financial section. We can move on to the next competency. Did you have a chance to read it, Kathy? Okay. So we'll consider that done. Mission and values. I had no comments or suggestions from anyone. If anyone has anything they'd like to change, we just leave it as is.
You might want to put in the minutes that Kathy showed up.
Good.
5:45?
5:47. No comments. We'll move on to the next. Under leadership, I believe, Sean, you have some comments there.
Yeah, I just have a couple of comments in general, and they're not anything I would insist on by any means. It's just kind of curiosities. I kind of liked the original language, through people, teams, and stakeholders, as opposed to the replacing it with utilizing all means at his or her disposal. That phrase just seems slightly totalitarian to me. So, otherwise, but it's not anything. It's a stylistic thing. So.
And
I would agree with that. I thought the proposed change language was, I didn't think of it as totalitarian, but I can see where you're coming from. But it seemed vague to me, and I thought the people, teams, and stakeholders was more specific, and those are the entities that are involved that you're working with when you're a leader. So I preferred the original language.
Okay. Cameron, do you agree?
I was trying to think of a way of how we could utilize both or mix it in to where it'd
be redundant. I mean, that's...
Well, I see both of your points, so I kind of agree also.
Okay.
Unless you see something else.
No, I mean...
Okay. Later in that next the sentence after that, I added, as Chief Public Relations Officer, promotes an active community outreach plan. Those five words, as Chief Public Relations Officer, is that acceptable?
Is that actually a title? Because it seems to me that the job description specifies that the authority manager is the spokesperson for the authority, but I don't believe the job description includes a capitalized...
How about just saying as...
I don't think it's necessary. I think the original language is... adequate and to the point.
However, the job description does say, as you say, he is our spokesperson. So this was and trying to coordinate between job description and the review was something that the HR person, Nanette, suggested. So that was my intention.
I personally like the language because, and I see where you're talking about in terms of job title, but I liked it because, in my opinion, we've had a tendency to sometimes, historically, kick that public relations job down to somebody else, and I think it's important to have it reside with the director. So what if we just said something like acting as chief public relations officer or something like that?
And what if we took away the capital letters so it doesn't look like a title?
Okay.
It's not a title, it's a function.
Acting
as chief public relations officer in lowercase.
But otherwise I thought it was a great suggestion.
Okay. Cameron, do you have a comment? Kathy?
No, I agree with that.
Okay, move on. Under management, I crossed out establishes and maintains budgets and finances, and that's now, I thought that was appropriate because we now have a separate financial competency. And any comments about that? Hearing none, we'll consider it done. Okay, under results, the HR manager, our HR consultant, Nanette, suggested that we didn't need the results section. I disagree with her, but so I had crossed it all out here. That was her suggestion, so I'll leave it to the consensus of the board whether you think that we should to get rid of the results section or leave it as is. Anne?
I kind of agreed with you, Tom. I thought there were some important items and for smooth functioning in that, and I guess I didn't really understand her suggestion to eliminate the whole thing. Was it mainly that it was not in the job description?
She had another idea, but mostly I'd say.
It seems like a reasonable paragraph, and
yeah,
to me,
too,
I would have just kept it, but I don't know what others.
Kathy, what do you think?
Perspectives are.
Well, I'm trying to see if any of these fall into other categories. If they could be blended into other categories.
That was kind of my thought. I don't have any problem with the wording, but kind of my only thought was that we want results under all the other categories too. So it's, I don't know if it's just whether there's a way of spreading it out or if it's already implied, but I don't have a problem with the specific wording.
If we're not sure, could we just leave it in and maybe make that revision next year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can talk about it. This is going to be a working document.
I don't know if you guys want it or not, but I've got her comment about teamwork on there.
No, I'm
results.
On
results.
Oh, results. I'm sorry.
Results.
I'd like to.
It should
not be a category in and of itself. Results are the overall performance of the job for using objective criteria to measure each competency that will provide us the results. We don't need specific.
So I think if you pick that apart,
I'm still more comfortable with what's here,
Kathy.
But I think if you pick it apart, you can almost all those, you can see that they will fit in another category. So instead of having a separate category under results, I think we, for instance, demonstrates responsiveness to the public, goes back under leadership. And so, I think that we could, for now, just to keep things moving more smoothly, leave it in and then look at maybe separating it out and putting it in different categories
to where it
next
goes.
Time.
Yeah.
You agree, Ken?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it as is.
We'll just put it, pull it up next time, and then.
Okay, we'll move on to teamwork. And Sean, you have I had crossed out team and added board in the second sentence. What you had sent me a comment.
My thought was that I worried that by crossing out team, it made the teamwork imply that the teamwork was more directed towards the board. So my suggestion was to leave both. It supports board and team decisions. That way it doesn't look like the teamwork is being neglected for the team.
Okay. That sound reasonable, yeah. Everybody?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I had a broader definition
team
of
and board.
Team
okay.
than just board. So I didn't see the substitution as reasonable.
As in the last sentence, I added, participates with local civic organizations and businesses toward mutual goals. And?
So are we, I kind of stumbled over that, not in the desirable concept, of course, but are we suggesting that those organizations' priorities are ours when we judge them to be of mutual benefit? And in other words, we're not suggesting, for example, that any community organization that wants us to do something is guaranteed that we're going to be there and participate, right? Because we have to decide for ourselves if such coordination with any outside group is of mutual benefit to us.
Well, what I was looking at, maybe it can be worded differently, of course, was that John, present himself to other organizations in the community as the authority manager. Mm-hmm. That's what I was looking for, that he does that. This is a
why don't we take out toward mutual goals then and just say participates with local civic organizations and businesses?
Okay, that's good.
I mean, we're interacting with them anyway, and we're part of the community, they're part of the community, we're going to have conversations about things that they're interested in. That's
excellent
what we do.
Suggestion. Thank you, Ann.
Cool.
Everybody seems to agree.
Then
so.
It takes out that evaluating the goals thing, which...
Okay.
I kind of tripped over.
I have maybe one alternate suggestion.
Go ahead.
The one little barking in the back of my head that I'm now hearing about this after hearing the discussion is I would not want this to make it look like we are favoring civic organizations and businesses and disfavoring regular customers.
Absolutely.
What if we said something like participates with local stakeholders toward mutual goals? And then it kind of includes everybody. And
what about the mutual goals part, though?
I mean,
if their goals aren't our goals, we're not going to participate.
Just take out
local stakeholders.
Civic organization and businesses, and just say stakeholders.
With local stakeholders. Perfect. That leaves the door open or closed, depending on what, as appropriate.
As much as I do think
we
should butter up local businesses.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
I feel a conflict of interest.
Okay, last item. I think. Oh, we got a couple more. Last item on personal effectiveness, once again, coordinating the job description with the review, I put in the language, maintains all personal industry license certifications as listed in the AM job description. And it encourages staff to upgrade and maintain their certifications. Anybody have a problem with that or a better language suggestion? Okay, cool. That's easy, as is. And the only thing I changed under staff assessment of authority manager's professional competency is I suggested utilizing the annual staff summary reports data, consider the following questions, etc. I decided to change that a little bit today. It's not on written there, but I was trying to get to utilizing the annual staff 360 degree reports data compiled by our HR consultant. Consider the following questions. Does that make a little more sense?
Yep.
I kind of liked your original language better because the 360 review is a professional thing right now, and it wasn't a thing 10 years ago, and 10 years from now it could be something, they could be calling it something completely different in their profession. And I think that staff summary reports, I don't see the need for the quotes.
Okay.
Because that is, again, it's generic enough language that we're always going to have some kind of staff summary report, whether they call it a 360 review or
okay, that what? Makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm sure we're going to be going back through this again and changing, and we can take it out.
It's going to be a working agreement as conditions change. Yeah.
But in general, I think it's good to keep things a little language so that it can be flexible unless it's an official name or something.
Well, we finish this. I'll put it together with your comments in and change language into the block review form format, and I will have a copy for everyone at next meeting, and we can formally go over it, make any final suggestions if needed. And then that will be our forum for this year's review. Thank you all for your comments.
Thank you for your work on that. That's not an easy thing to do.
Well, it's something we needed to do for a long time.
It's we've been revising it every year for the last several. And since we created one, we've been reviewing it and refining it every year. And this is another good step.
Okay, let's move on to the next item, the SDP. System development charge methodology and rate schedule update. John?
Thanks, John. Just a couple of small updates about this. I believe that the last board meeting when we talked about this, we talked about needing a 90-day public notification for the board to eventually adopt this methodology. We do have that posted. The clock is ticking on that. I believe I've sent everybody a copy of the actual, the SDC methodology report. We have received that finally from Parametrics. It's not part of the board packet for this meeting, but it's going to come into heavy play in a couple of months. So since we did not start the 90-day clock on this earlier, meaning the 90 days is going to extend beyond July 1st, which is normally the time we adopt new SDC rates and all those things. I guess I wanted to just find out how the board wanted to handle that. We usually adjust our SDC rates on an annual basis based off of economic indicators. I don't know how many people have read the budget message, but historically we have used a single snapshot in time to base our SDC rate adjustments on for the entire fiscal year. That would be the April version of the indices from the Engineering News Record. I've used the Engineering News Record for a lot of years as an economic indicator to adjust variable components of contracts and so forth. And my finding is if you put all your eggs in one basket, you're going to get some volatility. And sometimes the volatility is in your favor, sometimes it's not. My recommendation going forward with this is that we don't use a single publishing of the index, that we average the previous four and get a full year's. These come out every quarter. I should probably say that. So there's four of these results published a year. I have found that you get a lot less volatility if you average more than one reading to get your final number that you adjust your rates by. Now, that's just a suggestion. I made the suggestion in the budget documents, but the real thing I wanted to talk about here is since we're not going to know what our SDC, we're not going to adopt the SDC methodology or the rates for 90 days. That's going to put us at least a month into the new fiscal year. So what do we do in the interim from July 1st to when we do adopt those new rates? Should we go ahead and adjust our SDCs by the economic indices that we always adjust them with on July 1st? Should we wait until after we adopt the methodology and the rate structure that was determined by our SDC consultant and then apply the rates? Or how do you want to do that? I'm concerned that if we don't apply if we don't account for that and adjust our rates the way we always do in September or July 1st, we could have a situation where somebody applies for SDCs in the month between July 1st and when we adopt the SDC rates, and you know, they're not going to see any increase at all if we don't make an adjustment on July 1st. We can make an adjustment, the adjustment we always make on July 1st, and then after the 90 days, if assuming the board adopts the rate structure that has been determined for both the water and the wastewater SDCs, well then we can adopt that rate structure and then apply the same increase based off of that economic indicator to those rates at that time.
Now, these suggested methodology and rates were given it to us when? April? Or?
Well, and that's another factor. The water SDC methodology and rates are already a year old.
Yes.
So we may, once we adopt those, we'll probably have to add what we added to it in July 1st of 2022, and again what we add to it on July 2023, because we're a year behind on those adjustments.
The water.
So how much
the water.
Is there?
Because the water
is, how
was
much
done
is
so much
there?
Earlier than the wastewater.
It depends on economic conditions at the time we set them.
Yeah, I know, but in the past, how much has it been?
It doesn't matter.
Last year, I think it was 3.8. The year
depends
before,
on inflation and
two.
other things at the time.
So I have a question about when we establish the SDCs, whatever they are. I was trying to get to the website so I could look at the current language on the SDCs, but I seem to recall that there's a phrase on there that these can be changed.
Yes.
So it does not say these are subject to change each budget year. It says they can be changed. And so I think if we follow what you're talking about, we don't get ourselves in a bind, because we do have the authority to make changes mid-year.
Yes.
If it's appropriate to do that.
Yes, we do.
Make sure I understand what you're suggesting, John, is we take our current SDCs that we are operating under now, make a change according to the economic indexes, to those, both water and sewer, and then when our 90 days are up in July, we make an additional change.
Yes.
What we will do is we'll make a temporary increase on July 1st the way we always have made our increases on July 1st. When we adopt the SDC methodology and the rates structure that was recommended, we then, as soon as we adopt it, we then adjust those rates by the same economic indicator that we applied on July 1st.
I disagree with the wastewater, adjusting the wastewater and additional economic indices, because they just gave them to us, you know, so they've already factored in the inflation factor for this year.
Well, and I may have misspoke. I meant if I said wastewater, I meant the water SDCs, which are the ones we received last year.
Okay, that's what I was hoping.
Yes. And then wastewater would not be how would we deal with wastewater then?
It would stay the same as suggested.
Well, we could do it either way.
We take last year's and add on that index.
Well, the wastewater one we just received.
Exactly.
So it's already factored in.
And since we've got it, it might already be factored in, but since we got it before July 1st, have we applied our normal increase to it? Either way, it doesn't really matter to me.
I don't want to add our normal increase to the wastewater that we just received.
Okay, just because it's so close to July 1st anyway.
Exactly.
And that makes sense. I do want to say that we are not obligated to adopt these rate structures at all.
We can do them in August if we want.
We can do them. We don't have to adopt them. We can adopt them when we want to. I don't recommend we wait too long because then you start to think, well, how many adjustments are we behind? But, you know, we don't have to adopt them at all. I recommend we do adopt them for a couple of reasons. One, because we already paid for the study and the analysis, and to not implement what the results of that study or analysis indicates doesn't seem prudent to me. And by adopting them, we can always defend what they are very easily because we've had a professional analysis done very recently that documents that these rates are where they should be right now. You know, we have recalibrated our rates based on this latest study, and therefore our rates, I believe, are always defensible by referring to an analysis like this in the determination of those rates.
I think that is very rational, orderly thinking when it comes to budgeting and it is really, in my mind, the only way to go about it because you have to be able to explain to the public or to any contractor working for a community member, anybody. You have to be able to explain in a rational way how these rates were established and how they were increased.
So I think the consensus is on July 1st we'll adjust the water one. We won't adjust the wastewater one, but we'll adjust the water one, which will be a temporary adjustment until we establish the water rates, and then we'll adjust those again by the same factor. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to see what the line of thinking was about that. But really, just the discussion we had was the update I wanted to provide on this and to let everybody know that the public notice is in place and the 90-day clock is ticking. That will allow us to do this. In hindsight, I wish I had started this process, you know, earlier. So on July 1st, we could have done it cleanly. But unfortunately, we'll have to adopt these after we're already a month or two into the new fiscal year.
Okay. There's no further discussion. Let's move on to the last item under unfinished business is TLC loan update. John?
Yeah, the only reason I'm putting this on is we put it on last month. It was Rochelle and my understanding that this was a line of credit. It wasn't a loan. And the reason we put it on the agenda last month is we wanted to, if it was truly a line of credit, we wanted to pull money out of that line of credit because it's only 1.75%, put it in one of our accounts, which yields much higher interest than that, and then we would have those dollars readily available to apply toward a water improvement project. Unfortunately, we found out that we were mistaken. It is not a line of credit. It is a loan. I did have a conversation with a loan specialist at TLC who indicated that, yes, this is a loan and was very surprised that we were even able to get that loan because it's an unsecured loan for $500,000 at only 1.75% interest, which surprised this person very much. This person went on to say that not only would we not repeat a loan like that for you, we likely wouldn't give you a loan at all going forward because you can't collateralize a loan like this, meaning you can't repossess a lift station that is owned by the public.
I don't think you'd want it.
I don't think you'd want to. But that's the reasoning why this is a loan, and I don't think we're ever going to get a deal like not this again. And it sounds like that TLC will likely not even give us a loan for any at any rate or for any purpose going forward because they can't collateralize it.
I wonder if that's the reason why they were so adamant about who's signatory.
No, that's Standard Banking.
So how long ago was that loan? 10?
It was the airport lift station.
The airport lift station, I want to say it was 2009.
Yeah, and I mean, there's all kinds of discussion we could have, which is not relevant to where we are right now. But
so, we're okay, not, let's, probably never, I don't, I,
let's move on to new business then. Employee phone stipend agreement. John?
Do you want to go back, since Kathy's here, for the community center? Just get it off the agenda. Get it decided.
Well, we've already tabled it.
Yeah.
And why don't we, Kathy, what we want to do is get your opinion on this about spending this money. And you didn't hear everybody else's comments, especially Ann's, who disagrees with this. What do you guys want to do? You want to, I'll just open it up here. You want to get Kathy's opinion, or do you want to leave it tabled? And
I'd like to, I mean, I have some thoughts, and I'd like to get it taken care of so that everybody knows, so that they can plan too.
I'd rather go ahead.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's get her done.
So we'll
knock
return to unfinished business item number one, number 7A.
So I am not in favor of this organization giving money to the community center for this project. I don't think there is a big enough benefit to us to be able to do that. I talked to Jeanette and mentioned that we that the chamber had talked to us about a donation. She was really surprised. She said because it was under her impression that the chamber has adequate funding. And I've talked to some other people associated with the chamber, and they were surprised. And so I would vote against this group helping fund that project.
Okay. Still on the table. So shall we... Well, let's put it this way. I would entertain a motion to decide what we want to do with this proposal. And?
I'll move that we decline the proposal to donate public funds to an organization for equipment that we will not own or have any supervision of.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Kathy, I'm really sorry you didn't hear the other discussion, but is there any other discussion at this time? Okay, we'll hold a vote. All those in favor of donating?
No.
No?
The motion is to decline.
The motion is to decline the proposal from Chamber of Commerce. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Thank you all for your comments. The proposal is...
So does that mean it's automatically approved to do it then, or do we need a motion?
Yeah,
to
we need a motion to decide how
we
much
need money. A motion to decide to go ahead with it.
Go ahead with so it, or how much money we want to spend, or how?
Yeah.
I make a motion that we donate $5,000 for the audiovisual equipment for the community center.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion to donate $5,000 to the this AV proposal by the Chamber of Commerce for audiovisual equipment for the community center. All those, do we have a second and a motion? Okay.
Discussion.
All those in favor signify by...
Discussion.
Excuse me. Further discussion.
I'll just reiterate for the record with Kathy here now why I support it. The reason I support it is because I don't believe that the current conference room at PCJWSA is safe for us to conduct meetings in. So that was my main motivation for wanting to help contribute to the audiovisual system here is because I think we're going to be here for a long time.
So. I agree. I also agree that Rochelle had contacted SDAO. You could probably
reiterate that. Yeah, SDAO said it is a board decision. The district may donate funds to charitable causes so long as it doesn't run afoul of any other rules, such as a conflict of interest or campaigning, and provide such expense has been budgeted for, which it has not. It's also good to just bear in mind that the board is tasked with serving the best interests of the district and being fiduciaries of public funds, so we would advise that the board, should it choose to allocate those funds to the chamber for the equipment purchase, make sure everything is extremely transparent. The board should always be in a position to defend any expenditure of funds, including charitable donations, when asked.
And I say that it benefits the community as a whole. We are in the water business for the community as a whole. And the community center does a lot and has a lot of people come through here. And that's why I'm in favor.
And my comments are that I agree with both Sean and Cameron, but mainly... as a corporate citizen in this community, even though it is not budgeted, we have enough contingency funds to take care of this and contribute to this building that will benefit every one of us and everyone in this community. Kathy, you had something else?
I agree with Cameron that this building gets a lot of use. I'm in this building several times a year.
Or the parking lot.
for a variety of different activities. And I know that the system would be an asset to this building. I would feel more comfortable if the donation went straight to this building than to the chamber. So in talking to people associated with the chamber, their finances are a mess. Nobody knows...
Who's the chambers?
The chambers. Nobody knows what money, they don't even know what money is coming from which year. And when they tried to get information about money that comes from the county to the chamber, they can't track it. Oh my God. And so I guess that's one of my concerns. You know, Tom, you may go to all the chamber meetings and have a bigger, better... handle on that, but when people who are involved with the chamber tell me that they feel uncomfortable with the financial situation of the chamber at this time, it makes me feel uncomfortable that this organization is giving money to them.
Yeah. Now, would it
even more
would it benefit though that, I mean, whenever you give money to say the chamber, that it is designated for that specific, and if it doesn't get used, it comes back.
In theory, yes, but in reality, that becomes very difficult. So, and if they don't have clean tracking already, then I think it just it makes it more difficult.
I had a conversation with Mr. Olson, and he's been a part of the chamber for years and years, and he told me personally that they have the money to do this, but they not only need a little help, but they'd welcome it. And they're asking for less than 10% of the entire amount
project
that's needed to redo this. And I think there's some good PR in it for us, And I think it's good for the community.
I will renew my objection if they have the money in place to proceed with the project.
So we did talk about KCC being a nonprofit. Is the chamber a nonprofit?
No. It's a 501c4.
Okay. It's so I don't get an opinion. 501c3s
are charitable organizations.
KCC sounds a lot better than the chamber.
Political organizations.
As far as SDAO is concerned.
Because I'm pretty sure that if it goes to the community center, and we specific say it goes for that item
community center, but
to the community center for this project, it has to go to that project.
Okay, well,
who's asking?
I think we need to.
That's not who's asking for the
after
donation.
After this discussion, I think the motion needs to be changed.
I agree.
So, Sean, do you have a better way of stating that?
Well, so can we change the motion at this point, or do we need to withdraw it? Or
Withdraw
it and start over again.
Yeah. So you made the motion, so you have to withdraw it.
I withdraw my motion for the money to go to the chamber.
Okay, now we need a new motion.
A second.
And a second.
To deny.
To deny.
No. I think that one already failed, so.
That first one did, yeah.
Well, that was to the chamber.
That was.
Yeah.
That wasn't to the community center.
Right.
Now we have a different subject. Do we want to table this for now and explore the concept of making a donation to the community center? Because I think we would need, in doing that, we have a request from the chamber, but we would need, in doing that, to understand the relationship between the community center's financial situation and this project in particular. And if the chamber has already stated out loud that they have enough money to do this, again, I don't see where this donation of public funds is necessary.
I just want to be sure I understand. So if money was given to the chamber, it wouldn't fit the definition of a charitable donation.
Correct.
Because it's not a nonprofit.
It's not a nonprofit.
501c4. Right. It's a little different.
Right.
So, that's correct, too.
And the community center is a
501c3.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that
should we table this and maybe, I don't know.
All right, that's not a bad idea.
John,
we need to continue on. I think we need to find out what the
community center and find
the chamber.
Wait,
to find out what the chamber and the community center have agreed upon, and see if that would work.
So Jeanette is here. We could always ask Jeanette.
Well, let's table it tonight.
Yeah.
We got a few other items.
Okay.
Let's put it on the agenda, and so we thoroughly investigate.
So just for a feeling, though, I'm in favor of donating the $5,000 to the community center for the audiovisual portion of that. I am not in favor of donating it to the Chamber of Commerce.
Agreed.
Let's just put it on. I think everybody probably feels that way, too.
Let's find out what's going on.
Because of the nonprofit and the vice versa.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, it almost got cleared up.
Okay, new business. Employee phone stipend agreement. John, would you take that one, please?
Yes, I provided some background information in the manager's report for this, just because it's, you know, what's going on and the reasons behind our desire to do this are rather complex. In essence, we require our staff to carry a multitude of mobile devices. We have an opportunity to cancel our employee cell phones accounts. We currently provide all of our employees, with the exception of the office staff, a cell phone meant for work-related purposes. That equates to at least 8 accounts, if not 7 probably, right? 7 accounts?
Eight accounts. we can keep yours.
Yeah, that we would be able to cancel in exchange for an agreement with the employees who already carry their personal cell phones everywhere they go, to be able to utilize employees' personal cell phones as work cell phones as well. Which means, you know, we'll call employee cell phone numbers at work or during off hours if we need to contact them about work-related stuff. This agreement, I think, gives us the makings of an agreement to where we can implement something like this. It means we can clean up some of this. The employees can carry one less mobile device. We can cancel all these work accounts. And for the stipend that we're discussing,
Can we call it a reimbursement?
Well, we will. I was gonna bring that up.
Okay.
But just in principle, I wanted to describe the idea behind it, that we could provide employees with a monthly reimbursement to compensate them for the use of their personal cell phones for all our work-related purposes. I believe this is a good idea. I know that the staff have responded favorably to this idea. The net cost to the authority will be a wash, because what we'll save by canceling all the work accounts is about the equivalent of what we would now reimburse the employees for. This would be... initially, we called this a stipend agreement. I think we would like to replace the word stipend with the word reimbursement, because stipends that we found out after we sent out the board package give connotations of something that is taxed. And this is not meant to be taxed.
Yeah. Correct. We don't want to go there.
We don't want to go there. You know, this would be a weekly or a monthly check to each of the staff members in the amount of $50. As I say, there's really no increase in cost to the authority by doing this.
I have one question. We have pager-like devices, I understand, that are for on-call personnel, and that's mainly because of they live in areas where, you know, they have to have a satellite pager to be contacted. How would we get rid of those devices?
We would not get rid of those devices, because even with utilizing the employee's cell phone for work-related purposes, we still have the challenges of having very poor cell phone reception in many parts of unincorporated Tillamook County.
That was my only concern.
Yeah, these are areas where people live, these are areas where people travel, and we want to be able to get a hold of them, and the cost of the satellite paging devices is quite minimal.
Are you looking for a motion from the board?
Well, this is something that, you know, we plan to need to add to the employee handbook. I will say that one of my difficulties as a relatively new manager to a board structure, sometimes I don't know what needs board approval. Sometimes I don't know what I can do myself. And no matter what, if I don't need board approval for this, this is an informational item that I want to communicate to the board. If this is something I need board approval for, then that's what I'm asking tonight.
Yeah, so we're only talking about $300 or $400 a month, right?
It's a wash with what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's up to you. What do you think, Sean?
I don't think it's something that needs board approval. I would, however, very strongly advise against this policy, and I'm speaking from personal direct situations in the past, and that comes down to, if in the unlikely event there is ever any kind of litigation, where cell phone records need to be looked at, and those records are personal cell phones of our employees, we're opening our employees up to a whole lot of problems. If a cell phone has to be turned over to a lawyer, everything that's on that cell phone is game. And I really think that puts our employees in a difficult spot. So I would be very much against this policy to protect our employees, because even though the intent might be to only look at PCJWSA related stuff, once they get access to get in there, I don't trust lawyers or judges. Fair so game. I would it's be very, game. Very, very concerned about this policy.
Okay. I
having
agree.
Been on the Important. Receiving end of it, I can tell you what it looks like, and it's not pretty.
Okay. I agree.
I can say this is commonly done. In fact, everywhere I've worked for the last 30 years has had a similar policy. But your comments are well taken too, and it sounds like this is something that we should probably, I didn't think this was the type of thing that we might need to reach out to legal counsel for before we implement it, but maybe that would be a good step for me to do before
I would also advise making sure that everybody on your staff is aware of what the potential downside could be.
Yeah,
and have that discussion with them again and make sure they're comfortable.
They've had stuff in the news about pictures getting out there, you know.
From personal experience, when I worked for the Oregon Lottery, they provided me, every employee who was in the field, phones. And I totally forgot about this, but my phone was confiscated once because there was a crime committed in a business that I was at. Within a few hours, I never saw anything, but they confiscated my phone to see if there was anything going on. And that's so I totally forgot about it. They just gave me another phone the next day. But so yeah, I see your concern. I think that's a good point.
The casino's the same way. They issue their own phones, and when it's time, and there was issues where they confiscated somebody that had gotten terminated and then found out there was other information on there, and then it just exploded.
Well, I will definitely give this some serious thoughts. Appreciate the feedback. You know, it's difficult when you live somewhere without good cell phone service because you wind up having to, and then we wind up having to carry so many devices. You know, I was viewing this as perhaps a way to kind of clean that up without any additional cost, but because we already have issued employees work phones that are dedicated to work-related purposes, maybe that's the way we stay.
Well, so. What about as far as pagers? I mean, we've kind of gotten away from pagers.
They use them already.
Why can't tip a pager and then come in or something? Or you used to use CDs in all the trucks. I don't know if they even do that anymore.
Well, we used to have a pager service that we apparently loved, and then we lost the provider.
Yeah, but we couldn't have used it for this. So you can't page somebody and expect them to drive back to the office every 5 minutes.
Have
yeah.
a discussion with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So. And that's the challenge.
So I think at the very least, if you decided to go ahead with this, employees should have a choice whether they want to do this or not do it.
Sure. Sure. And that was going to be our intent as well. Yes.
Well, coming back on us.
Yeah. Well, let's. Okay. I think that's enough discussion about it. I'll do some more checking and give it some more careful thought.
Okay. Thank you, John. Let's move on then to temporary employee for seasonal work.
Yes. And again, I think this is a decision that I can make. I'd still want to communicate to the board so they're aware that what we're doing and why. We would like to hire a seasonal employee for a three-month period to help us with groundskeeping, pressure washing, painting during the summer months. was working on a job description. I did not get it done in time to share with the board, but it's going to be a pretty simple job description. We'd like to move forward with this. We have the budget for it. Am I correct in assuming that this is something that is my decision? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Any? I'd like to get feedback.
I just had one question.
Sure.
This person would be an employee of BCJWSA and therefore subject to the same employment policies in terms of. I don't know what.
Policies,
you know.
Yes. Benefits, no.
Policies, yes. Benefits, no. Yes. Thank you. I'm thinking about safety policies and all of that kind of stuff. And I just wanted to.
They're covered under workers'
comp. That popped into my head. Yeah, I just wanted to say it out loud.
But they would not receive medical benefits, things like that.
They would have health insurance and stuff.
Right, because they're checked.
So it's like a road crew temporary 6-month job, like the county does. Okay.
We'll advertise at maybe the high school. You know, maybe get somebody who needs, you know, can help us out for a summer. It would really help us out a lot. So.
Okay. Through with that, let's move on to the new resolution John wrote up for us on accessory dwelling units.
Yes, and I'd like to say that really the only controversial thing about this resolution is what I'd like to see us apply as the applicability of it. Accessory dwelling units can take two forms. They can be detached and their own freestanding building, or they can be integrated into an existing structure, somewhat similar to somebody just adding a bedroom to a house. My personal belief is that requiring somebody to install a new water and sewer service line to a room that they simply add to an existing dwelling seems extreme to me. And because of that, you don't get any SDCs if you don't have a new water and sewer service line is the downside. But nonetheless, requiring that of an integrated ADU within our service boundary seems extreme. So this policy is written with the intent that it'll only apply to detached ADUs. And I do want to say that we did have a 20-year-old resolution that talked about the installation of a new dwelling unit on the property. It's the one that I mentioned here as needing to be amended. Resolution shared my philosophy that it was only applicable to a detached unit. So that's really the only, I think, the only controversial thing about the way this policy is written. I will say this policy for the first time gives us some authority and some policy regarding illegitimate ADUs. I don't think we've ever had any policy regarding that. We needed a strong policy there. I believe that this policy gives us that. This is, in light of the recent passage of the amendment to the Tillamook County, I can't remember what the section is called. But we're going to start seeing these more and more. And so we need a cohesive policy about accessory dwelling units.
So what kind of numbers are you thinking?
You're talking about in terms of rate?
No, I'm thinking about numbers of dwellings.
Oh, what we might see? Well, I it's hard to say. And I'm concerned that on one hand, every tax lot could conceivably install one of these,
legally,
which means that our expectations for the demands of our system at build out are going to substantially increase beyond what we thought they were. But this is the first one. It's hard to know what to expect, But I do believe that we'll see more of more requests for this.
So you do have one request now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the first request we've seen we've gotten after the adoption of the new rules.
Okay. By the county. After mm-hmm. the county's mm-hmm. new ordinance. Okay. And
just to reiterate and make crystal clear that this proposal would only apply to accessory dwelling units that are separate freestanding buildings, which is part of the county's ordinance on accessory dwelling units, but their ordinance includes both types, in existing building and separate building. But this would only apply to a separate building.
Our policies about this would only apply to the detached version of the ADU.
And that's something that's governed and supervised and permitted by the county. Yeah. It's not something that, it's not a judgment that PCJWSA is making. Mm-hmm. No. We're following through on what the county has authorized.
Yes, yes.
Updated.
And so it becomes effectively the same as building a new building on a vacant lot.
Exactly.
I mean, it's that. Okay.
Exactly. I don't want to jump ahead to the next one, but yeah, I won't until it's time. But yes, that's essentially correct. Any accessory dwelling unit that's built within our service boundary that is integrated into the existing building will be exempt from our policies about ADUs.
Okay. And we have, if I remember a conversation or two you and I have had a while back, we have had some discussion with community development at the county mm-hmm. about the details of this and how, for example, in this ordinance it's proposed that we would be issuing availability letters just like we do for new construction.
And they have told us that they would require it.
And they will require it mm-hmm. and they will follow through on communicating with us as if it were a new building.
Yes, one thing I like about this mm-hmm. policy is It's a symbiotic type of relationship with mm-hmm. the county. Our best interests are their best interests. Their best interests are ours. This will be something that we have already heard from the county that we will cooperate on heavily. And therefore, we won't allow a connection unless the ADU has received approval by the county. If it's not built to the county's use or design or development standards, we will not allow water service to the dwelling. And so I like how we're using teamwork to achieve a common goal. And every conversation we've had with the county about this is exactly what they envisioned.
And I think there's a major safeguard in that, in establishing that relationship that you have with them on this specific topic, because these are dwelling units and the county has regulations for that govern all kinds of construction mm-hmm. things, but also included safety and egress in case of emergency and things like that, which are not up to us mm-hmm. to determine. Mm-hmm. And it's not uncommon around the world for people to build a garage and then 5 years later to decide, oh, let's put a bedroom up there and we've got a bathroom already, let's just plumb another one up there. And there is no oversight of mm-hmm. the safety for a dwelling. And the county has that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I'm very pleased that you've initiated these conversations with them and that there'll be oversight and insurance.
There'll also be enforcement by the county.
Enforcement, yes.
About any illegitimate ADU that we're aware of. They want us to report to them, they'll investigate, they'll intervene at that point in time. And I think it's going to work well.
So, hearing if there's no other discussion, I suggest do you have discussion or would you like to make a motion?
No, I have discussion.
Okay.
And I apologize, I tried to find it and I couldn't find it. Our existing policy doesn't have some language in it about an ADU meeting some criteria about like having a sink and has to meet four things, and so that doesn't, that, I don't remember that needing
to be. It does, but we have no enforcement ability.
No, I understand, but that didn't, there was no distinction between whether it was detached or not detached, right, with that criteria?
No, that criteria applies whether it's attached or detached.
Okay.
It has to have complete provisions for living, eating, cooking, sanitation, all of that.
So we would need to modify our existing ADU policy?
This is our existing ADU policy if we adopt it. I'm proposing we amend the only other policy I found about this, which doesn't even refer to them as accessory dwelling units. It only refers to them as dwelling units.
And I think all your concerns are already penciled into the Tillamook County ordinance. So all we have to do is determine between what type of ADU it is. Mm-hmm. If the county says they're up to par, then we can, they'll ask us to provide a letter of water availability. And then they allow construction
and
to start.
And they do the inspections.
Correct. So we can eliminate that other language because it's already taken into account by county.
Okay. And we're not going to rescind the other policy because the other policy also contains rules for what they call accessory structures, which are garages, maintenance shops.
Having bathrooms.
Yeah.
So do we have to modify that old?
We have to modify it in the sense that I'm going to strike out all of the policy regarding the dwelling units because this takes what was already there and improves upon it and updates it.
Okay. Any other, Ann?
Any other discussion first? I was going to make a motion.
That's what I was going to say, so go ahead on.
I'll make a motion that we approve resolution number 23-02 in the matter of establishing rules and regulations for the connection of water and sewer service to an accessory dwelling unit, semicolon, amends resolution 0301.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second on resolution 2302. All those, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nays? It's unanimous. The motion passed. Okay, now we go to the next item. John, your rate discussion for ADUs.
Well, we have to determine what we're going to charge in terms of SDCs for a detached ADU. Again, I think it is extreme to charge a structure that can only be so big. I think it can't be any bigger than 800 square feet as a rule.
Bigger than my house.
I think it's extreme to charge the full SDC for something like this, which I think is currently what for a
for water alone is 18,007.
For water alone is 18,000 what?
$7.
My recommendation to the board is that we would apply the rates that we have determined for apartments to these units based off of how small they are. And what is the apartment one right now?
Apartment is $12,787.
So instead of 18,000, it'd be 12, and that's just for one type of service?
Yeah, that's just for water.
That's just for water?
Just water.
Yeah.
What sewer?
Sewer is 6,900 versus 9,729.
So 6,000 for the apartment?
12, yeah.
6,000 for the apartment?
Roughly $3,000 less.
Okay, 12,000 for water, 6,000 to the 18 instead of 27.
Close to 10,000 altogether less.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just my thought process. I just think charging the full rate for something like this, again, I'll use the term because it's the way I feel. I think it's extreme. But this is a board decision, and that's just my recommendation. What I need to impart to the board is we do need to determine a rate for ADUs because they're coming, and we need it to support the resolution as well.
I felt the same way. Yeah. I felt we should charge for an apartment.
Yeah.
That was my feeling as well.
In Googling the square footage of a small apartment, 850. And these ADUs can't be more than 800. So.
Well, yeah. What's the size of the cracker boxes down by the slough?
I don't know.
We charge them full SDC, though.
Yeah.
Each one.
But there are four fourplex.
Yeah.
There are different rates. There are a different rate in a different scenario.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, and
I think that logic is well taken. I appreciate the thinking and the proposal, and as long as somebody can't come in on a vacant lot and say they're building an ADU, I think using the apartment rates for an ADU on a new on a lot with an existing house is perfectly logical and reasonable. So do we need a motion?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it would hurt.
So I will move that we adopt the authority manager's recommendation that system development charges for accessory dwelling units be
the apartment rate.
Be the same as the current apartment rate. Or be the same as the apartment rate.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It's a unanimous vote. Okay.
Nicely done. Thank you.
Move on.
Both of you have been hard at work on that.
Board meeting accounts payable agenda item.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to the board about this. I think the portion of our business meetings where we have had the AP question and answers has always been a little awkward, but I think it's important that the line of inquiry doesn't become, you know, a question or a comment that could be deemed inappropriate. I've seen this before, and I think as a group we have to be very careful in how we discuss stuff like this, because we don't want to give anybody the impression that I, as the authority manager, are inappropriately spending public dollars. I don't want to give anybody that impression. It's okay to disagree with the purchase. I fully expect the board knows, as part of their responsibility, is to be sure that authority funds are spent appropriately. And I think we just have to be careful about some of the comments and some of the line of questioning related to this topic, because I think it can, as I say, give somebody, and when I say somebody, I mean the public, if you give somebody the impression that we're not spending funds appropriately, and it could also give somebody the impression, based on some of the things that are said and the way they're said, I could give the impression as well that board members are engaged in some grandstanding and other types of activities. I just wonder if there isn't a better way to handle this part of our business meetings, where we don't, where the conversation doesn't devolve into things that could be construed as petty, things that could be construed as grandstanding. I think the board has an obligation to keep an eye on this stuff, and I think the board has a right and an obligation to question any purchases that they feel are illegitimate. I just wonder if there isn't a better way to do that than this public meeting forum. I guess my question for the board is, how do we provide the transparencies that we want and not give perceptions in the process that we don't? And I'm pretty uncomfortable with, you know, how these segments of our business meetings have gone at times. I was particularly put off by the conversations at our last month's board meeting, and I would like to suggest some reforms that will still allow the board members to express their opinions about purchases, to post objections about their purchases, to question the legitimacy or the justification of some purchases, but if to do it in a way that just appears to be more constructive and less likely to give people that are listening to our meetings the wrong impression.
And I'd like to start this discussion off by stating I understand your concern, and we spend a lot of time doing this, and this meeting, I mean, here it is 7 o'clock. We probably spent 10 to 12 minutes on, maybe a little longer, but like that today. Last month, we probably spent 15 or 16, but we did get into minutia, and I understand that. However, my opinion is, as a public official, you did state that we have the right to do this, and I think it's part of being our right as directors is to, you know, have due diligence. And by that I mean to question purchases. I understand you're being uncomfortable about it, but most of our questions, I feel, are usually related around, you know, the company that's being utilized, the vendor, and the description that's given. I think it was Michelle, a previous authority manager, who started the practice of adding more detailed descriptions, and that I truly appreciate. But I'd also like to point out that when I was a new director and I saw all these different vendors there, I asked an awful lot of questions just being a newbie. And I don't think that's inappropriate. It is time-consuming. I understand that. But once again, it almost gets into minutia. So I understand your concern, but I do think it's our duty to do that. But we don't need to get into down to nickels and dimes stuff. Kathy?
Well, I agree that the board has a responsibility to make sure that the budget is followed and that expenditures are appropriate. But I also think there's a fine line between micromanaging and having that kind of oversight. And I think as a board member, I feel like I have to trust that John and his staff are making appropriate expenditures. We can see that in the overall budget report. I do not need to know every penny and where it goes, if he's spending money on chalk and pencils and whatever, because I think that's his job and Rochelle's job to be taking care of that and monitoring it. I strongly do not like micromanaging staff.
Thank you. John?
I think it's important that we have the ability to talk about finances in a public setting. Having said that, we've gone to great lengths to try to come up with a code of conduct for board members, and it's up to each individual board member to decide whether or not they want to follow that code of conduct. And as elected officials, there's not anything anybody can do about it if a board member decides not to follow a code of conduct. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Cameron?
Well, I was told several meetings, I think Michelle was the one that said that we are responsible for the funds, and those are the only time that we could question funding is at board meetings and at budget time. And I ask questions because it's like, some of this stuff is, why? Why are we wasting money on several things? And I was told that it's at the discretion of the manager. Okay, well, I just want to find out the where the thought is. Because it's like, it's just, sometimes it's like we just readily hand out money, and I don't get it. And if that's the case, then it's so easy to go in other ways. Other reason I ask questions, it's find out what things are. What did I ask about the PH? Didn't know what it was for. It's like educating, you know.
But I've only been on the board a short time. I haven't ever seen where we're just giving away money. I think every time we've asked a question about an expense, either Michelle or John has had a legitimate reason for that expense. And I think if we don't have some trust in our staff, we need to have a different staff.
Ann?
I think that we have lost sight of the fact that a board member's responsibility is not day-to-day financial management. A board member's responsibility is fiscal oversight. And there's a huge difference between fiscal oversight, which means big picture, making sure that funds are that we're not overspending items. And that's why in the board packet, the fiscal year report analysis of that is more the board member's responsibility. The day-to-day checks for whatever purpose, I think if we start to interject ourselves or continue to interject ourselves into those issues, we are micromanaging, and that is anathema to proper board of directors behavior. And we do have, and have had for years, staff that are happy to answer questions if any board member has any question about a specific expenditure. And I will say that from my experience on the board, it is a good way to learn some stuff. But when we start questioning the necessity of that expenditure, when we go beyond just wanting to know what it is, to start talking about whether or not it should be spent, then we're into the arena of that's why we hire an authority manager, and the authority manager and the executive assistant are tasked with managing the day-to-day budget and expenditures. That is not board business.
I agree.
And I feel very strongly about this. I think anybody in SDAO, if we go through, and we have done workshops with the board, with SDAO consultants, and they will say the same thing much better than I just did. But I do think that we have started down a path which is becoming way outside the realm of what board members ought to be doing to be responsible.
I agree.
Elected officials.
I agree completely.
This is not our business. Not quite that way. That's not exactly what I mean, but I think I made my point.
I agree with what you're saying, but I have to disagree. I don't think that we have lost our way. I don't think this board has lost our way. I think there have been individual comments by individual board members who have gone outside of the boundaries of responsibility, but I do not think that this board has lost its way.
Okay. I completely agree with that.
I agree with that.
And my final comment is, once again, I think in a public meeting that's being recorded and witnessed by the public, that we do show due diligence by asking occasional questions. However, I would agree when we get to accounts payable, where this is what we talk about a lot, that a lot of your questions can be taken care of prior to the meeting by making a phone call, which I did today. As a matter of fact, Rochelle answered about 10 questions for me, 9 maybe. However, I do think it's important that occasionally we bring up individual line items we see on AP reports to get clarification. So I think it's probably a good policy in the future to maintain that option as board members to ask questions about AP line items, but at the same token, use that privilege rarely, and to get most of our questions done before the meeting or shortly after. So once again, we spend about, just my experience is about 15, sometimes as much as a half an hour, but rarely. But it's usually about 10 or 15 minutes on that one agenda item. And I think that we can modify our way we do business by taking care of it before the meeting or after the meeting.
And Tom, I really take your point about due diligence, and I respect that. I think that is an important thing for board members to do. But the position that some of these conversations have taken us is sort of due diligence micromanaging. Tomato, tomato. It's the same thing. And so I think we have to be cognizant of that and restrict our own comments and questions in the public meeting to things that have more to do with the broad fiscal oversight. And I think that if we would all commit to contacting the office when we get the board packet with any specific questions that we have about a specific item, that we can satisfy any concerns that we might have about what this was for. And then we can look at the fiscal year report for do we have enough money left in the budget for the year to carry out the authority's business. That's really where our focus is, should be, is are we managing the big picture of the finances of the organization effectively to carry out our mission. Thank you.
No further discussion?
Well, I've got something funny to say.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. When you first started, you were asking questions, and I said to you, "Hey, Tom. Hey, best thing to do I started doing would be call down and talk to Rochelle." And you had told me, the public has a right to know, and it needs to be public input. So I went right back to asking questions that anybody would ask me on the street, public interest of the things. Yeah, maybe opinions of spending money as far as calling down. I don't know. I think it probably, I have, there's issues of calling down there. And so I don't call unless I absolutely have to.
trust. So for the public to know, who's here from the public? We have four workers.
We have
four board members.
Recorded that goes to the website.
Right.
So the public is around.
They are around if they do listen. I mean,
can I just add
anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
I think you make an important point about the public right to know, and that is a phrase that I think rings in the back of all of our minds. The public absolutely has a right to know this. But it is not a board member's responsibility in a board meeting to question this level of stuff. Anybody can question anything by contacting the office. And board packets, as far as I recall, are public information. All of these documents are public information. If the public has any particular question about how funds are spent at PCJWSA, anybody in the public can walk into that office and ask questions about the budget, ask to see the budget, ask to see the last month's expenditures. That this is all public information.
Well, where I disagree here is that we do have a website, and although it's been updated at times, this public information is not on there. And except for the recording, as I understand it, it's difficult. So we need to make some kind of arrangements with our web person so that
we
can
at the
put
person.
That. Well, that's what I mean. We have a company that we you know, get the web for us. So maybe you need some training or something so that we can add this kind of data.
If it's possible.
Our meeting packet. That's public information. That's our only real way to talk to the public anymore because COVID's really laid us low as far as folks
coming.
We put the agenda on. We put the minutes on. We put the MP3
you
on
do,
there.
You do yeah. do
yes.
that now?
Yeah. Yes.
No, it's been on there
That's
forever.
All, it's always been on there.
What about
we don't put the 65 pages of board packet on there.
Why not?
But it is available on request.
We never have, but it is available upon request.
And how much time do you spend putting those items on the web page? Is it?
I'm a little quicker than I used to be.
it is tedious, I assume.
Tom, could we let this conversation continue between John and Rochelle, having heard
sure.
what people's concerns
yeah,
are?
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
And maybe the two of them could discuss what kinds of changes might be feasible, reasonable, appropriate, but in terms of it all being public information, again, anybody can walk in off the street and ask for anything about the management of this authority.
That's why I like websites, because it's there for everybody. Anyway, I think your suggestion has merit. We'll go ahead and let John look at this a little deeper. So that brings us to item number 9, guest questions and comments. Have we had any comments, Rochelle, from the public?
No.
Letters, anything special? John?
No.
Okay. Chair, director comments. I only have a couple. As I was going through last month's minutes, we had, John, you sent us a mail chain from Tanya Grass on May 3rd, specifically asking her, who's from SEAO, about making exceptions to our resolutions. And there was another question, but this one I picked out mainly because it allows us to make exceptions. And this was in reference to the folks who had a water leak on someone else's property, and they wouldn't allow redress on their application for a refund. And the other thing I wanted to mention was last month we had a discussion on our Horn Creek gauging station, and we asked, we agreed to that, but we asked for the labor breakdown. They had.
I'm sorry if I must have overlooked that.
Because they had they had a flat rate for labor, but they also said they had five or six different, you know, types of people working on it. And I was kind of wanted to know what who worked on what, how many hours, so how did they come up with that final figure for labor?
I remember it now, Tom. I'm terribly sorry I lost sight of that, but I'll be sure and get that information.
Thank you.
Yes.
Anybody else have any comments?
Nope.
Cameron, do you have anything?
Can't afford to have them.
Okay, it is now 7:19. This meeting is adjourned.